Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up, it's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's November 30th, 2012. You're listening to the finest PokerCast money can buy. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long. You can actually buy this thing now?
Yeah, sure. With your good looks, you could buy it with your credit. Whatever you want to do.
Put on one of those little donate buttons for PayPal.
And it takes nothing out of your account.
It's just to feel good knowing that you click the donate button.
That's right. Make a donation to the Ante Up Nation.
Oh, wow. So, Chris, here's the thing. I got a new rule, I think.
Oh, terrific. Like, there's not enough already in this world from you.
Well, no. I mean, we're talking about, you know, these rules that we need to change, and there's not enough structure, and people getting away with stuff. You know, I'm a rules guy. I like to have some structure in my poker room. And so this is going to be my rule. You know, when you go to, like, you know, those hotel pools or any kind of public pool, right?
Right.
And there's always that sign that says, please shower before you enter the pool. And there's a little shower there. And, of course, no one ever does it, right? But it's just the fact that it says it makes you think that makes you feel bad for jumping in the pool all dirty instead of showering off, right? So if nothing else, it kind of shames you and people that actually shower before they enter the pool. But I'm thinking I'm going to buy up a bunch of these placards, right?
Yeah.
And I'm going to put them in every poker room in the country. And it's going to be shower before you enter the table. And so the new rule is they're going to, you know, hey, Chris C, your 1-2 seat's open. And you're going to run up to the little counter and they're going to like, hi, Chris, how many chips do you need? 100? All right, great. Here you go. And you're in shower stall 6. Once our staff has deemed you to be clean and fresh smelling, you may sit down and partake in the poker.
You do realize that like 43.8% of all your rants are about smelly people.
Well, you know, maybe I'm trying to make a point here.
Back to the old days, when we used to go into the radio station back at the times. Not even the one that we use now, WDAE, but back way back when, you were complaining about guys who stunk.
Here's the thing. How hard is it? We've already talked about this, haven't we?
Yeah, but, you know,
How expensive is water? How expensive is soap?
Some people don't have homes. They're just putting together a few
homes, then you need to be somewhere other than at my poker table.
They're collecting a few empties, trying to get a bankroll together so they can come in and double it and buy their, you know, Jack Daniels or so. I have no idea, but, you know, hey, some people just don't have, you know, they're not the luxury of staying in a resort. You know, they're just trying to make ends meet and, you know, man, stop picking on the otherwise good-smelling challenged.
The good-smelling challenge. I like it. All right. Well, here's the other thing I think is it's not necessarily a lack of soap and water, necessarily, for some of these folks, though certainly for some it is. I think it's that these people come to the poker room dressed like they're going to run the Iditarod after they finish their session.
They're going to run the Iditarod? Isn't it the dogs do the running for you in the Iditarod?
Trust me, some of these people might be at the dog level.
Okay.
You know, I'm a big critic of poker rooms keeping it like a meat locker in there.
Yeah.
Really, to keep it a little warmer. But you know what? I bring a light spring jacket with me now to the poker room. And if I'm a little chilly, I put it on.
Okay.
All right? I don't understand these people that have these big ski vests, parka kind of things on them in a poker room. And it's obvious that they don't need it because it is just turning them into stink factories.
Well, let me ask you.
Their glands are just going crazy under there. They're trying the sweat's trying to get out and breathe, and it can't. And it just soaks into that stuff, and then they just reek. There's absolutely no
reason. Let me ask you, you were in what, Northern California?
Oh, no, this is everywhere. This is absolutely everywhere. I was just reminded of it on this recent trip. But almost everywhere I go, there are people in the poker room dressed like the little kid from Christmas Story.
So you're telling me that when you walk into the Silks, there are guys in their parkas that are sweating and stinking?
Absolutely.
Oh, my God.
Pick the day, we'll go there. I'll tell you one guy that is way overdressed.
Okay.
And then I will double down on that bet that that guy stinks.
Okay. You might have yourself a bet there. I might take you up on that next time we go out together.
I'm having a little fun here, but I'm absolutely serious on that. I guarantee you, any poker room we walk into, there's going to be somebody that's overdressed.
Okay.
And then I'm willing to, we're gonna risk $1, you know, so you can tip the cocktail waitress.
Yeah, maybe that's a.
And then I'll double down on that. I will double that bet to $2 if they have any odor whatsoever.
Excuse me, sir, could you come over here for a minute? My friend and I have a wager that you stink.
No, we're not gonna like get in their face. We're just gonna kind of do a little, you know.
I really don't want to walk around sniffing strangers in poker
Jupiter
rooms.
Orbit there, and you know, if you have to raise your nostrils, then you're trying too hard. I'm talking about just wafting odor here. I'm not talking about really, really getting down and searching for the odor. I'm just the odor that comes and finds you is what I'm talking about.
Well, you know, there is opinion in that. So I don't know if we have to get a third party, I think, that would weigh in and say, does this guy really stink enough for me to have to give Scott another dollar, or can I get my money back?
That's fair enough. We will have an independent arbiter.
All right, that's what we need. Oh, my God. So apparently you just keep running into these stinky players. And
how can you not? How can you not?
I guess. I don't know. Are these at cash games, or did you get the table?
33.7% of poker players reek.
If it's cash games, you can always get a table change. You know,
unless it's a good table, then you gotta just gonna suck it up. But
oh,
I should have to suck it up.
That's a real bad use of words there, buddy. You don't want to use that phrase there, but I know what you're saying. I've had my share of smelly people near me and stuff, and of course, I always think of you. When somebody's odorous on my left. But, you know, while you were gone, I had a little dilemma. You know, we always like to teach on this show, teach poker, whether it's new games or, you know, teach ways not to play poker because we're terrible. But
we are experts at not to play poker.
Recently, not many people know this, but my stepdaughter got married this last weekend, and so a lot of family was in town, and my brother-in-law was in town for my future son-in-law's bachelor party, but it wasn't going to be like
a lot of law involved in this story.
It was more of a poker tournament, and we talked about this a little bit before, how bad these players were, but my brother-in-law said, hey, I don't really play Hold'em, you know, can you teach me a little bit about the game? And I'm like, well, do you play poker? And he's like, well, I really don't play poker. I know what beats what, but I really don't play. I said, so you don't play poker at all? And he's like, no. I said, okay, so you want me to teach you how to play Hold'em? He said, yeah. I said, okay, well, it's really simple. And then I broke out all the stuff that we usually talk about with the Poker 101 courses, you know, the fit and fold, the blackjack rule for good starting hands, that thing. Telling him everything. But then he's like, okay, let's play. And I'm like, me and you? He's like, yeah. I said, okay, well, heads-up poker is a lot different than playing in a tournament like you're thinking about playing tomorrow with all these guys. He's like, well, how's it different? And I said, well, starting hands, you know, you're in different positions, you know, your hands get better as they... And he's like, his eyes just glazed over. He's like, let's just play. And I'm like, all right, dude, we'll just play then. So I played him. I beat him in like 8 minutes. And it was like a tournament that should have lasted at least a half an hour or more. So he's like, man. And I'm like, well, I told you, heads-up play is different than a full ring game, you know, a full ring table or whatever. I said, it's not the same. When we're playing heads-up, you got to play more hands. You got to probably play just about every pot unless it's raised and you have nothing. You know, I mean, I was telling him all these things. He's like, oh, okay, I get it now. All right, let's play again. I said, are you sure? He's like, yeah. I said, okay. And I beat him in 6 minutes. So I was like, all right. How do you teach someone who's never played the game ever when the only example you're going to be able to give him when it's over is a heads-up match? It's like you can't. You can't explain to him all the things that need to be learned in poker, playing heads up. I mean, teaching a heads up basics to somebody heads up is very, very, very difficult. And I don't think there's any way you could really be effective.
I disagree.
Okay, good.
You know, I'm fresh off my I have a perfect streak on my poker 101 classes, right? Now, not the ones that you come in and pollute on the cruise ships. The ones that I have to teach by myself. At home, hanging out, having fun while I'm working my ass off.
Right.
The last two times that I've done this, one of my students went on to cash in one of the tournaments, right?
Right.
And I happened to get on Baltimore. So, you know, here's the thing. I kind of know what I'm talking about.
Okay.
And this is what I told the folks is, you know, hey, it's expensive to play poker. You're not always going to be able to play somewhere. You're not always going to have a very benevolent poker operator like me offering you a $10 no-juice tournament after your class. So what you need to do is when you go home is deal out 10 hands and just practice. Even you set up the teddy bears, the Barbies, whatever you have around the house, and at least look at the hands and think about how you would play at each of those positions. So what I would suggest to you then is that you guys would have dealt out 10 hands, and you being the absolute poker god in this situation, you play the other 9 hands.
Okay.
That way, at least the button's moving around and he's getting a different position. Obviously, you've got a lot more information because you're looking at 9 more hands. But you're not gonna abuse your brother-in-law that way, I wouldn't think.
Well, the deal was though is that he just wanted. He could tell he was getting bored before we even played. Like he's just like, okay, I want to play. He wanted to feel. And so, if I had to sit there and deal out 9 hands and look at 9 hands while he's sitting there holding his ass, I don't think that would have been effective at all.
What are you going to, like, you know, stare him down, put the blue shark optics on?
No, well, I'm just saying, I think that he was impatient with one hand. You know what I mean? He was impatient with me having one hand and him having one hand, and he wanted to get it all in. You know what I mean? And I'm thinking,
You know, if you're going to be a student, you got to be a student, right?
But if I'm playing all the hands, it still doesn't help him.
Yes, it does. Because the button's going to move. He's going to get that different position, and then he's going to see what the pressure is with if there's a raise from you under the gun and then a re-raise from you in the cutoff, and then he's on the button. He's going to figure which one of you is stronger.
Yeah.
It's not perfect, I admit. Yeah. I mean, it's not my fault you guys don't have friends.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough.
But that's the best approximation that I think you can get. It's certainly better than just dealing out 2 hands, and because heads-up poker is not real poker.
Yeah.
Or for a beginner.
For a beginner who's trying to learn the game.
Exactly.
But, that was a huge effort to have to make to teach him how to play Hold'em. You know what I mean? It was like, I thought he just wanted the rules of the game. I figured, you know, okay. And then I was like, well, if you're playing a full ring game, then position means a lot. And I started talking about that stuff and everything, but he's just like, I just want to play. And I'm like, yeah, I wasn't thinking I'm going to deal out 10 hands and I'm going to play 9 of them for him just so he could get the effect of it.
I'm thinking.
I know at the end I said,
brother-in-law suffered for that lack of effort.
Just save your money, I said, and hang out with the guys who aren't playing. That's what I said to him in the end because I just didn't want him to lose his money and blame me. So that's what ended up happening. But I got to tell you, teaching Nolan and Hold'em to somebody and then playing him heads up afterward is not fun. Or it's not that it's not fun, it's just that it's not a real effective way for him to learn the actual game of tournament poker. You know, it's just not. Well, the reason, another thing, too, is that when I remember, I think it was Mike Caro who talked about instruction and teaching people all the time because that's all he ever does. And then he said that he would never get paid for lessons, but they'd have to agree to play him when the night was over and let him keep whatever he won. And so I'm thinking, okay, well, you're teaching them how to play a full ring game, and then you're playing them heads up for their money, and you're destroying them. You know what I mean? That's how I felt when I was playing him. You know, I taught him how to play ring poker, and then when it was over, I beat him in 8 minutes. So I just felt bad.
I never feel bad when you feel bad. That makes me gleeful.
Hey, well, it's not crazy. It wasn't like I was ready to open a vein. You know what I mean? I just felt bad that, you know, he couldn't appreciate the game playing it heads up. You know, and I think he would have fallen asleep if you had to play it ten-handed, to be honest with you.
Here's the thing. I'm not picking on your brother-in-law here, but it's apparent from your telling the story that he wasn't really serious about wanting to learn to play. He just didn't want to look like an idiot during this tournament, right?
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
If he says, hey, I just want to play, I don't want to learn, then there's only so much you can do with the student.
Yeah, that was pretty much it.
So I'm getting you off the hook there.
Thanks, bud.
But anytime you want to teach me to play heads up, I'll play.
Absolutely.
just wear your parka.
Whenever you're ready. That's all I gotta do, right? Is totally distract you by stinking.
Well, one thing I don't think we're going to see on Papes is a heads-up match. There seems to be a lot of consensus that the heads-up format didn't work. But a couple months ago, we got a clip from one of our listeners who was very excited to win the Second Chance Papes. And if people don't remember what Papes is, you know, we had this great thing called Apes, where we gave away bananas. We had a lot of fun. Then the government said, no, you can't have fun. And we couldn't do any more. And then some of our great listeners, Poker Geek MN in particular, picked up the mantle and runs a Play Money series, Poker Stars home games client now, just for fun. And participation isn't as big as it was with the money, but people come out and have a good time. And then they have a second chance every night. And a couple months ago, we actually got this clip, and we've been holding on to it for a while, so let's let this guy have his moment in the sun.
Hey, guys, this is Bama Devo. Just played in your Saturday night second chance tournament and took it down. I want to give a shout-out to Catch a Fire, finishing third, and Killy 93-41. Those guys gave me a tough run. Appreciate the guys. Thanks for all you do. I love your podcast. Enjoy listening to it.
Boy, how desperate are we? We have a second chance winner in a Play Money series from 3 months ago, and we're running the clip.
Hey, we're all about the recreational, normal, everyday player, right?
People really do win on Annie Up.
Exactly. But no, in all seriousness, they're getting ready to amp up for the next season of Papes. And if you go to our forum at annieupmagazine.com/forum, you can get all the details on how you can play. And they are soliciting suggestions on what they could do next year. And hopefully very soon we'll have online poker back, and we can banish that P in front of Papes.
That's right. That's
fun. But right now, every day that ends in a six, there's a Papes event, so go to the forum and start playing.
And just like Scott likes to have an alcoholic beverage on every day of the week that ends in Y, there will be a Papes event on any date that ends with a 6.
Yeah, and I like to have two on days that end with a Y.
All right, our real hotline is 813-448-1120. You call it, we use it, we give.
Hi, Scott and Chris. This is Greg calling from California. And recently I was in a tournament with my buddy, and we had a last longer bet. And he has more chips than me, but we both went out at the same time. I know technically he would probably win the bet, but I'm just calling to get your guys' opinion on that, even though we did go out at the same time. Thanks.
I got this one.
Oh, I thought I had this one. No, all right, you go. You go, and we'll see if we agree.
Whoever's prettier. you gotta come up with something, right?
Yeah, I got something. I'm ready.
And the world revolves around the pretty people like me. So that's what I'm going to go with. What's your decision?
I'm going to say that the bet is a last longer bet. And no one lasted longer than the other person. It doesn't matter. It wasn't say who places
that's
higher.
That's not true, my good friend.
He did not last longer. If they went at the same time, he did not last longer.
Somebody put their bet in last.
No.
Why not? That's it's all immaterial, right?
No. When the hand is over, that's when they die, not when they put their bet in. When they're eliminated from the tournament, if they're eliminated precisely the same time the cards are turned over, they're out. They both did not last any longer than the other person, regardless of chips. Now, if it's for money and stuff like that, as far as placing, then that's different. You say, okay, whoever finishes better, but this is the last longer bet. They were at the exact same time eliminated from this tournament. No one gets money.
Well, that's no fun.
I know, but I could tell he called in because he didn't want to have to pay his buddy. That's the whole reason he called.
Wow, but maybe his buddy's listening too. Now you're playing favorites.
Sorry, I'm.
I'm going to take the role of his. I'm going to be the advocate for his buddy and say, yes. In a tournament, the person with the most chips technically finishes higher, so I think that should carry over to last longer.
And okay, so then it's not a last longer bet; it's a finishing higher bet.
Gosh! All right. Well, now, okay. Today's a professor of semantics. An anti-up.
No, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. You got up in front of the whole anti-up nation this morning and said you love rules. Okay? You want to abide by things, you're going to abide by this. The bet was a last longer bet. These aren't semantics. Semantics are completely out of the realm here. It is last longer. He did not last longer than you, did he? Is he still playing while you're out? No, you guys are eliminated at the exact same time. You guys tied. Tied, that's it. You don't have to pay him, Rick. There you go, buddy. I'm for the guy who calls in and makes the effort on the show, not the guy who's living in the shadows, lurking, listening. No, I'm for Rick. Rick, don't pay him.
All right. You know, I'm gonna concede that you are correct here. But what I would say is, from a strategic standpoint, is you got to keep an eyeball on that last longer dude.
Yeah.
And if he's all in, you go all in and leave one chip for bus fare.
They're probably at the same table, right? Because how would they have known they went on the exact same moment?
Yeah, absolutely. Right? Now, obviously, I guess they might not have had the option of holding back a chip. But certainly, if they both got knocked out, yeah, they must have both gone all in. But you know, the famous chip in the chair story, you remember that, right?
Yes.
The chip was hidden under a napkin.
Under his napkin, yeah.
Gotta use that trick every once in a while.
Oh, look, my hanky covered this chip.
I'm definitely saving that for the last longer. Far more important than winning World Series poker. Oh, I was all in, but nope, here we go.
Sorry,
Chip. You know, I can't help it, I'm this tidy. I got napkins everywhere. You know, I don't want to get any liquid on there. Oopsie, you lose. Sorry.
See, that's what happened when we were at Binion's, and that woman was all that stuff in front of her chips and everything. She was in a last longer cash game bet. Remember when I was yelling at that lady? I'm like, you got all that stuff on the table. I can't tell how many chips you got.
Swiss Army knife.
Can't even see your cards. So that's probably what was going on with her, too. She had a last longer bet with one of her friends in a cash game. And, of course, I made her lose it, so that made me feel good.
Yeah. All right, Rick. Well, we're glad you called the hotline, and hopefully you're glad that you won, according to Professor Chris.
That's right.
And even if you didn't win, according to Professor Chris, you're going to win a deck of J-Design playing cards. The official playing cards of Ante Up. You can pick up your own decks in the Ante Up store at anteupstore.com. So you're a winner nonetheless, Rick. And remember, everyone else, call 813-448-1120, and we'll help settle your bar bets and give you some swag for it.
All right, our mailbag comes from Golden Corral, Drew Cohen. I don't know what that is supposed to mean, but maybe you've had a conversation with this guy. I don't know. He likes to eat the buffet, I think, is what that means. I'm not sure.
Who doesn't like the Golden Corral? Have you seen those commercials? Those guys, they jump out of the car to go to Golden Corral. That's how good it is.
Yeah, and then they've got
the chocolate fountain.
And the cotton candy.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. These guys better buy an ad or something, because we talked way too much about them. All right, so he wants to know what our view is on wild cards creating a rank of hands that don't really exist in poker, like five of a kind. Says, my view is that wild cards are supposed to aid in making ranks of existing hands, not create a new rank. So while I think it's great that Wild Tallahassee Poker is trying to get new players into the casino with fun wild cards, I think it's probably doing a disservice by teaching them a rank of hands that don't actually exist in poker.
Hmm.
Well,
what does your brother-in-law say about this?
Yeah, he loves it because otherwise he's bored out of his mind. So I mean, he loves wild cards. He don't care. You can call it anything you want as long as he's winning pots or, you know, making big hands. Here's the deal. It depends on your point of view. If you want to just make big hands and five and six of a kind and all that, whatever. You can only play five cards, so five of a kind really is the last hand that, you know, it's one thing. So you
can, really the only hand that's created, correct?
Yeah, I mean, other than that, and the other thing, too, is a lot of times when people play like this, they say naturals beat wild card hands. So if you made a natural straight flush and someone else made a wild card one, the natural straight flush would win, you know, or whatever, a natural four of a kind. I don't even know, whatever. But depends on where you're playing and how you're playing the game. But I don't think this is a big deal. I mean, the fact that you're playing with wild cards means that you're not really existing in the rules of poker anyway. Sure, there are wild cards in draw poker in the old days.
That's true, I guess.
But I mean, really, if you're not playing with those 52 cards, then you're already suspending what is real poker. So I don't know. I don't think it's a disservice. I think you're trying to get people interested in the game. You know, I don't think the Wild Tallahassee Poker is doing a disservice at all. You're trying to get people into the card room. You're trying to make card rooms successful. You know, you're trying to get other guys to be able to play while they're bringing their spouses to go play the other game to get them. You know what I mean? So I don't think it's a disservice at all. I think it's just a careful explanation. You know, hey, when you play for real or when you're playing over there, there are no wild cards, so the best hand is X, you know, or whatever. So not that big of a deal, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's where I would say it's not necessarily a disservice. I mean, you go play any other poker game, guess what? There's no jokers in the deck.
Right.
So you're not going to have the possibility of making a five of kind. So, you know, you're never going to make that hand. So now you're not going to be, hey, wait a minute. I got five of kind now. Isn't that winning this game like it does in Wild Tallahassee? I mean, you're never going to have that hand.
That's true.
Other than Wild Tallahassee. So,
that's true.
You know, just those wild cards help build action. That's the idea. So.
And when we played it in our home game that one time, it was in draw, and it can only complete a straight or a flush when you use the wild card. So we didn't let it, you know, you weren't needing to have four of a kind or five of a kind. It was just strictly, so that was making a hand that does exist in poker anyway. So it depends on your rules with the wild cards. So.
But you know what would be cool, though, is thinking about this, is what if you had a seven of a kind flush? Wouldn't that be the most awesome hand ever?
Yeah. But Professor Chris will remind you, you can only play five cards.
Yeah, if there's five nines of clubs on the board and you have two in your hand, that's got to be an unbeatable hand, right?
I would think.
Seven card, seven of a kind, flush. Well, I guess technically you can only use five, so five of a kind, flush.
I remember one time I was playing with family, and they were joking around. We were playing like baseball. For those who don't know what baseball is, the threes and the nines are wild. And I think, I'm not sure, but I think someone ended up with all wild cards. It was like four nines and three threes or something. I'm like, well, what do you have? You don't have a hand. What hand do you have? You know, you have just wild cards.
Whatever hand
you
want.
It was pretty wild. So, there you go. You don't want to play with wild cards, but, you know, if you're trying to encourage people to play and have fun, maybe they want to do that. But I don't think it's a disservice at all.
All right, well, Golden Corral, and, you know, Golden Corral is going to be on our next cruise, so...
cool.
We'll be sure to hit the Wind Jammer Buffet there, because I'm sure he's going to like that. But, no, Drew, we appreciate you writing to the mailbag, and obviously you just recently got some swag, so we're not going to send you something else. But everybody else, email your mailbag questions to podcast@antiupmagazine.com, and we'll send you something wonderful like a classic tournament dealer button from tournamentbutton.com. which offers a variety of home dealer buttons with timers built right into them. You can even customize them with your own photo or logo. And be sure to ask about the Anti-Up logo version. And don't forget to use code Anti-Up when you order for free shipping.
One last reminder that I and Lee Childs will be playing in the Holiday Charity Classic on Sunday, this weekend, Daytona Beach County
Club. I and Lee Childs? Is that...
I
are you
and
supposed
Lee
to
Childs.
Be our Anti-Up grammarian?
Well, if you said it, you'd say Lee Childs and me.
If I said something like that, you'd be all over me.
But it was Lee Childs, comma, we'll be playing in. Lee's also teaching a seminar on Saturday, so there's more information at holidaycharityclassic.com. But, yeah, look for me and try to take me out. Put me out of my misery.
And the Red Rock Casino Resort Spa in Las Vegas will host our next Antia Poker Tour event on January 25th with satellites beginning January 21st. I'll be there, so come out and say hi and take a shot at making the cover of Antia Magazine. And they've announced special Antia room rates of $89. More details on that and all Antia Poker Tour events can be found at antiapokertour.com.
And, of course, our next cruise now, February 4th, Jonathan Little will be our onboard pro going on to Port Canaveral. And we're past our rate guarantee deadline now, so you want to book as soon as you can so you can make sure that you still get the best rate that we can give you. And also, we're sailing out of Miami, New York City, and Tampa next year. Get all the details, including how you can win your way on board at Dover Downs, Derby Lane, Tampa Bay Downs, Daytona Beach Kennel Club, and Seneca Salamanca, at antiupcruises.com. All right, Scott, what happened on the Antiup News Desk this week?
All right, the South Carolina Supreme Court has ruled that organized poker games are illegal, even in private homes. The split decision said it was immaterial whether poker is a game of skill or chance. As long as money is wagered, it violates a 210-year-old law that seemingly also outlaws games like Monopoly.
Just absolutely sickening. Fascists.
Hey, you know, they're just ruling on the law. The law is a bad law. That's the thing.
It's
so
a bad
law. I'm not going to pick on the Supreme Court here. I mean, they can't repass laws. They can just interpret the laws. So, but here's the thing. There's some laws that should be on the book forever. You know, I love our Constitution. But other laws that were made 210 years ago might not necessarily stand the test of time. Just saying.
Just saying. All right, the Rational Group, a parent company of PokerStars, has informed former Full Tilt Red pros that they will not be retained. Rational is replacing the group of pros with its new group called the Professionals, and has no immediate plans to enlarge that group, Poker News Daily reports.
Yeah, no big shock there.
No.
I'm shocked. I really thought her Howl Letter would come back.
No, they're thinking rationally.
Okay. And finally, speaking of people not thinking rationally, 7 months enforcement agency have been fired for playing poker while on duty. The BBC reported the rest were part of a larger crackdown on, quote, lazy attitudes.
I think you broke up a little bit there. So you said 7 members of a London law enforcement agency, they were fired for playing poker, okay, on duty? Oh, my God.
Part of a larger crackdown on, quote, lazy attitudes.
Lazy attitudes.
You know, and I take offense to this because there's poker can be a very intense game.
That's
and if you're
right.
lazy, you're probably losing.
That's right. There, I'm
lazy,
sure that
you probably smell, but
I'm sure that they were wearing parkas when they were playing.
I was gonna say, I mean, if they got fired because they stunk while playing poker on duty, totally on board with that. Absolutely, good decision. But if they were clean smelling, then let's just give them some more law enforcement work to do.
Yeah, nothing lazy about that.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, jeez. All right, well, you know what? We get to pull an O'Malley's move out of the oven today and smell what baked. In other words, we get to wrap up another episode. Let's hear part one.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we find ourselves back in our regular $1, $2, no-limit hold'em home game. This time, we're playing ten-handed. We've slipped up a bit and find ourselves with 175. We're on the button. The action gets folded around to the cutoff, who makes it $8 to go and has about $300 behind. We look down at the ace of spades, jack of diamonds. This player is pretty tricky, and he likes to steal. In fact, he's the same player we had that heads-up bet against several months ago. We make the call. Yes, with a trap hand, but we are in position. The blinds fold, pot is about $20, and the flop comes the ace of hearts, 10 of clubs, 9 of clubs. Okay, there are alarm bells going off. This could be trouble. Our opponent leads out for $12. Top pair, third best kicker. I know, this is starting to sound like one of those push and pray stories. We make the call, but we don't like it. The pot is at about $45, and the turn is the jack of clubs. Did we just suck out? Our opponent checks this time, and we count out a bet of $25. He instantly raises us all in. What do we do?
Oh, Chris, I do not like a single thing about this hand.
How come?
I don't like the pre-flop call. I don't like just calling on the flop. I don't like making the initial bet on the turn. I don't like it. I just don't like it. It's like broccoli.
You don't like broccoli?
Well, I like some broccoli, I guess.
You hit when we're at the
about
Asian
buffet. Liver and onions? It's like liver and onions.
I love liver and onions. My favorite dish.
Yes, I know. It's terrible.
I ask for it every year on my birthday.
Shouldn't ask for it on your birthday. They should already know.
Well, they do know, but I always reiterate that. That's what I want.
No, I don't like anything about this at all. And in my opinion, this is an easy fold. We might happen to be ahead, but still an easy fold just because we just butchered this hand from the beginning, I think.
Do I always have to fold to shoves?
Yes, you should, actually.
I mean, it seems like no matter what, everybody folds when people shove on them. And, you know, we have top two. If he had a straight, would he really shove? Because a flush is possible, too, already. Would he really shove into somebody who could easily have a flush here? And if he had the flush, would he really shove? Or wouldn't he value raise or just call and get more money out of us? So I think we might be good, Scott. I think that you have to... I agree with you, though. I don't like the pre-flop call. I think I would either fold ace-jack, or knowing this other guy's kind of tricky and kind of maybe stealing here or whatever, I might re-raise. But
right.
I don't think that I agree with you. I don't like the preflop call, but other than that, I think we're in good position. I think we might be ahead. So I'm tired of folding.
The problem is, you think we might be ahead, right?
Yeah, I always have to think. You don't know for sure of anything.
O'Malley probably thinks we might be ahead. All of our listeners might think we might be ahead. The problem is, we didn't play this right, so we're thinking instead of knowing.
There's no way you could know anything in this game unless you absolutely have the only hand that can't be beat.
You get a lot more information out of this hand than what we have here, right?
I mean, it's still going to be thinking. You're not
gonna know. But I mean, we could be thinking less, you know.
which is right up your alley, buddy.
Let that hamster get off the wheel. Have a pina colada, enjoy the view for a little bit.
No one will ever accuse you of thinking more. Okay, well, I'm going to call. I'm just tired of folding.
Sure you are.
I can always imagine the best hand, and that bothers me that I'm always folding to it, because I can imagine somebody has a better hand than me. I'm tired of doing it.
I can imagine that I have five of a kind.
That's right.
I'm going to call.
How'd you get that joker? All right, so I'm calling, buddy. I want to see what happens.
Hello again. There are straight and flush possibilities. It could be a flopped set, but it could just as easily be kings with the king of clubs, queens with the queen of clubs, ace-king, ace-queen, or ace-jack with the ace of clubs. It could even be ace-ten. Would he really check-shove with a made flush? I don't think so. Perhaps a made straight, but even that seems unlikely. Simply because a made flush would just snap him off. We might be good here. We make the call, and our opponent turns over the ace of diamonds, jack of hearts. The same exact hand. Nothing can come on the river to give either of us the whole pot, and when the seven of hearts hits, our second week in a row of a chopped pot gets cemented. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying we often overlook the fact that our opponent could have the exact same hand as us. But don't. It happens. I hope to see you on the film.
We weren't behind.
Yeah, all right. So, yay. Yay for the chop.
I have to agree.
They're not being results-oriented, and I think the true lesson in this hand isn't the decision that O'Malley put us in here. I think the true lesson is not to get to that point with as little information as we did.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not happy, and I'm not unhappy. Like kissing your sister, I think.
See, no, I don't have a sister, so I have no
neither
idea.
Neither do I, but I've been told that's what it's like. So, But I think that I agree with you.
Your sister's really hot.
Gross, dude. That's just absolutely gross.
Just ask it. I don't know.
But I would have re-raised, I think, or raised, or whatever it was, preflop. He raised, so I would have re-raised him, I think, preflop or folded. And, you know, the call did get us in kind of a sticky situation because you don't have as much information as you think you probably do.
Oh, the two calls.
Two calls. But, yeah, you're right. I just did not fold, though. I was tired of folding. Tired of folding just because a guy shoves on me. Why is he shoving? That was the question I had. Why is he shoving? And, wouldn't he want more money out of me? So, I'm glad that we tied and didn't lose. That's the best part.
Yeah, I'm happy for O'Malley. Just kind of upset that he put me in the situation. Yeah, that's all I'm saying.
Well, he thought you had a sister.
Yeah, well, you know.
What are you going to do?
Now he knows. You know, how come no one ever says kissing your brother?
I don't know.
I mean, I can't relate to that, but I have a brother, so I can think about it. I'm like, ooh, yeah.
Well, I'm sure female poker players say that all the time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe. I've just never heard anybody say it before.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Maybe we need to start that. Maybe that could be our new catchphrase.
We'll put it on the cover of the magazine each month.
Yeah, yeah.
Read Annie up. It's like kissing your brother.
Chop pot today. Like kissing your brother.
All right, well, you just got back from a wonderful trip, so I want to hear all about it, man.
Yeah, absolutely. The Antioch Poker Tour kicked off November 19th. Absolutely could not be happier with the location for our inaugural event, Thunder Valley Casino Resort near Sacramento, California. Threw out the red carpet for us and our guests, and we just had a great time. The most important event of the Antioch NorCal Classic features 2 day 1As, Friday and Saturday, so hopefully you're listening to this on time and can still get out there and play. So plenty of time for the NEM Nationals to win their way on the cover of the NEM Magazine. Whoever wins that event, that's going to be our next cover, and I know you're excited.
I am.
You've got the space all blocked out, just waiting to see how pretty the person is.
Ready to go.
And of course, you can visit NEMmagazine.com /Thunder Valley for information on the last couple events. But I flew out there last week, actually on Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
And spent 5 nights out there, had a great time, and came back with plenty of stories to share with you and the nation this week.
Well, I know you mentioned that they rolled out the red carpet. I hear that they even went a little further for that with you. What is this deal with this ride you got?
Yeah, I know. I land, of course, it's Thanksgiving, you know. So, I mean, we always do a traditional Thanksgiving breakfast here. So it's not like I missed anything on Thanksgiving here. But still, it's kind of weird to be traveling on Thanksgiving, right? But I get off the plane there in Sacramento, and boom, baga bing, Ricky Ticky Tavi. There's a Thunder Valley limo that are waiting to pick me up.
Oh my God.
It was off the charts, man.
Oh my God.
I've only been in a limo once before. You know, I rented one for my wife's birthday once, and we had like 190 people cram into it, right? I had this thing all to myself.
Oh my God.
I was walking around, I was pushing different buttons, doing all kinds of different things, changing the radio station, drinking beer. I was living it up by myself.
Wow. I know, you sent me a picture too. Thanks for rubbing it in. Jerk.
Well, you know what's funny about this, though, is that normally when I travel in business, I am like moving here, there, you know?
Yeah.
Stop in. Hi, how you doing? How's your poker room? Good. Great. Call me later. Boom. Get in the car and move into the next place, right?
Yeah.
And this particular trip, you know, they offered to come pick me up, which I appreciated. They didn't tell me they're sending a limo. That was very nice. And then I was at Thunder Valley the entire 5 nights. I never even walked outside the resort. Never even got a breath of fresh air the entire time. I stayed there for 5 straight nights. I don't think I've ever done that in my life. Just stayed at one place and never even walked outside.
Was it good
of course,
for you?
It was like 40 degrees, so, you know, I'm from Florida, so I would.
But still, though, I mean, did you enjoy it? Was it good for you?
Oh, absolutely. No, I mean, it's a gorgeous place to spend 5 days. You know, they got a great spa there that's included, and all kinds of great restaurants, you know, great Asian place. And of course, the poker is just phenomenal there, too. So, yeah, absolutely. It was really cool. It was kind of weird, you know. You know, I'm, you know, talking to my wife when I'm out there, and I'm like, you know, it's just kind of weird to never leave the resort ever.
Yeah.
I guess this is what normal people do.
Yeah. No one would ever accuse you of being normal either,
no,
Scott.
Of course not.
Not a chance.
That would be boring.
So I guess you were there for a lot of this. So, you know, what was your feeling you were getting from the people there?
Yeah, I mean, that was actually the best part of all this. You know, I knew going in that, you know, Ben Irwin, the director of poker there, who we had on the show about a month or so ago, I knew he was very excited, and I knew his team was putting together, you know, pulling out all the stops to make this a good thing. But you just never know until you get there whether the players appreciate that effort or not. And I was just surrounded by love the entire 5 days. I mean, people were coming up to me at the tables, shaking my hand, thanking me for bringing this series to them, which I think is kind of funny. I mean, really, Thunder Valley did it. I mean, obviously, we created the Antioch Poker Tour and, you know, had to sell it to them. But I mean, they were very appreciative that that we were out there. And, you know, the thing about Sacramento is they just haven't had a big tournament series ever, right, as far as I can tell. So, I mean, this is brand new to them. And Thunder Valley usually does something around Thanksgiving called the, I believe it's called the Harvest Hold'em. They used to do it. Just a couple events. So to do 9 or 10 events is a much bigger deal. And then, of course, you know, people were just raving about the the cover of the magazine. I actually had a guy that I was playing with in a tournament said, you know what, I don't care about the prize money. He's like, I can make that back in 3 nights at the 2-5 table. What I want is my picture on that cover of the magazine.
Yeah.
And brag to my friends about it. And lots of people were telling me stories like that, too. So very, very appreciative of how much how appreciative people were that we were out there and what Ben and his team were doing there. You know, and then so the Twitter thing, right? This is your thing, right?
Yeah.
I'm the Facebook kind of guy.
Right.
And I still don't quite understand Twitter. And we actually had a funny moment where if you were there, I think you were probably... I know you would have been laughing. You'd probably still be laughing if you're there. You know, I get the Twitter pushes on my phone from Antioch Magazine, so I check them. But I really don't know what to do with it. I don't really understand it, right? But during the 450 tournament, the first one I was there for, $100,000 guarantee, we had what I'm calling a lesson in how to use Twitter. We had one person that posted a real negative comment, another person that posted an honest, hey, what's the real deal? And so I'm there huddled around with the poker room manager, the assistant poker room manager, and we're all trying to figure out Twitter on the fly in the middle of this tournament. Because these people are actually tweeting Matt Savage, you know, the world famous tournament director, to ask his advice on it. And I think it turned out to be a really great story for this trip, because it turns out that Ben actually knows Matt Savage, has his number on the cell phone, and actually consults with him on tournament questions pretty often. And as soon as this guy tweeted this thing, he got on the phone to Matt and worked it out, and it turns out that Matt sided with the player, and they're going to make that change going forward. So I think that's a testament to the customer service skills of the Thunder Valley staff, that they're willing to consult with folks and make this a better event. And, you know, this is the first event for us, obviously. This is the first event, any poker tour event for anyone, so it's the first one for Thunder Valley, too. And you know, I think we both learned some lessons on how to make things better going forward. Certainly, it was a great first start for us all. But the fact that I think that we've got people involved that are willing to listen to players and make changes, and not be arrogant in the sense that, you know, hey, this is the way we do it, this is the way we're always going to do it, I think says a lot about the folks that we've chosen to partner with on this.
Okay, well, you said that a lot of players said to come up to you and thank you and stuff, but you met some other people too. You met some of our fans and everything, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Two of our ambassadors showed up, which was great. Lori Ann, our Southern California ambassador, actually flew up and played in a couple of events. Had dinner with her one night. Absolutely hilarious woman. I think we talked about it on the show before too, but she was on this game show called Great Escape with her husband, right?
Right, and they won that, yeah.
Yeah, it turns out that she's been on 6 game shows, Chris.
Man.
And she's won every single one of them that she's been on.
Oh my God, that's awesome.
I mean, how many people out there would just die to be on one game show and lose? And she's been on 6 and won all of them. That's just, it's absolutely amazing.
Oh my God.
You know, and talking to her, having dinner, and then we spent a lot of time, you know, at the tables and stuff. It was another one of the things that just reminded me of how cool this whole thing that we've created is, that, you know, 5 years ago, we would have never met anybody like Lori Ann.
Right.
But because of Annie Up, you know, she came into our fold, and there I'm sitting there having a, you know, Kung Pao chicken, and just hanging on every word of her game show exploits, which is absolutely great. Great ambassador for her. She was talking to us up at the tables, and then even after she left the day before I did, people were asking me about her and following up on the stuff she gave. So absolutely great. And then Garrett Roth, our new NorCal ambassador, came over and played the bounty event with me. Great guy. And what's funny about Garrett is he used to live here in Tampa forever, and I never met him.
Yeah, that's weird.
Then he moved out to San Francisco, and that's where I had to finally meet him. But kind of cool that we had so many people come out and support us from our team. That was great. But, you know, then the other thing is, you know, we've been promoting the heck out of this on the podcast, right? You just never know. Sometimes you just never know how many people are actually listening to us, you know, outside of the 4 or 5 people that make fun of us on the forum. So I get to town, and I get a Facebook message from one of our longtime listeners, Matt Moody. He's like, hey, Scott, I drove 5 hours from Oregon. I'm down here. I'm ready to play the $450. And I'm like, that's great. 5 hours? And so I caught up with him and hung out with him for a little bit. And he had a phenomenal run in that 100K guarantee. Just plowed through the day 1A field and then came back for day 2. And then just got really, really unlucky to go out 14th. He lost a river bet for most of his chips, and then got it all in with ace 10.
Oh.
Obviously, he doesn't listen to one half of the show. And got sucked on it with king jack. But finished 14th in that for a nice little payday. You know, top prize in that 450 was $35,000. So,
wow.
You know, I think obviously he didn't get quite to that much, but certainly paid for his trip down from Oregon. But it's great to hear podcast listeners come in and play. And then at the final table of the horse tournament, a guy reached out. He's like, hey, you're Scott from Antioch. I'm like, yeah. He's like, I listen to you all the time. I'm Randy from Livermore. And I'm like, really? Great. So we talked on the break for a while and found out that he just missed the final table earlier in the series. So he had a great little series, too. But, you know, the magazine's relatively new out in California still. So it's nice to see that the podcast has some power, that we have some people that have heard about us and listen to us every week. And, you know, when we put together an event like this, they show up. That's pretty cool.
I appreciate that. A lot of love. So, you know, one of the things that I like about tournaments is that it brings a lot of action. You know, when we go to the World Series every year, it's the cash games that are the best part for me, obviously. So what about that? What was the cash game action like? Was there a lot of tables going?
Yeah, what I was interested about this is that this is a 21-table poker room, and they got approval to remove some slot machines to add in four more tables. And for those of you not familiar with casino operations, you pretty much have a better shot of getting somebody to cut off their leg than remove a slot machine from the floor.
Right.
To replace it with a poker table. But they really wanted a successful event, and so they put those out there. And that made what helped them do work with that is the fact that you can have those great tournament series like they did, but you did have to sacrifice the cash game action. I think they always at least had five tables reserved for cash games. And then as the tournament tables broke, they as soon as the table broke, they opened up their cash game and got people into the cash games as quickly as possible.
Right.
But even, you know, when it got down towards the end of the tournament, they had every table going. And for at least two of those days, and of course it was a weekend, but two of those days, the wait lists were more than two dozen deep in almost every game. And they were spreading up to eight games, different games. You know, they had a limit... a couple different limit hold'ems. They had a limit Omaha. They had a couple different no limits. They got a pot limit Omaha going. They even had a crazy pineapple on the board. And so they definitely got a good variety and a lot of people there. And people definitely had some juicy games, I think.
Man.
But speaking of the Omaha, I was reminded why you call this the devil's game, Chris. I played a little 4-8 Omaha High-Low, which I love when I go, and it's usually a kill game, too. So, you know, I could play that all day, all night if I could. So I sat down and played that actually two or three sessions. But the very first session, I'm dealt ace, deuce, 9-10, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Not a great hand, but you got the nut low, and, you know, so we'll get it in, right? So the flop comes 9-9 deuce. Could you ask for a better flop here?
I don't really think so. Maybe another nine, but other than that, you're doing all right.
And so we had two opponents, right? And so I'm betting. Another guy raises. The other guy calls. I raise. He caps. And then I'm like, this is great. There's no way anybody else has 9-9 deuce here, right?
Right.
I'm going to keep jamming this thing. I think the turn came an 8, so I'm like, all right, so now I'm a little vulnerable. Maybe somebody might have a 9-8. But I knew this other guy was probably going low, so I wanted to keep him in, so we capped it again, right? And then the river, a low card gets there, and I check and let the guy make one bet. The other guy that's been hanging around calls. I decide just to call just because I don't know where I'm at now. I don't have a low, obviously, and maybe I lost the high. I turn over my hand. He turns over 9-deuce as well.
Okay.
Absolutely unbelievable that we had the same hand, right?
Yeah.
And then this guy that called a cap pot on the flop with a 9-9 deuce board with ace tray and absolutely no high possibilities in his hand stuck around and gets half the pot while we get quartered.
He's a genius.
I mean, I was just shaking my head there, and I'm like, I was even telling folks, I'm like, you know what? I was raising a retreat to punish this guy, and he ended up punishing us. How does that happen?
That's because Satan is at the switch.
Absolutely the devil's game.
That's right.
But I'm still going to play it. Mostly because of that. You don't get those kind of stories in Hold'em.
That's pretty sick.
Well, then Monday night, they do a lot of promotions at this room, which I think is great, too. They don't have a lot of competition there, so they don't really have to do anything, but they do it because they want to give back to the players. And Monday night, during Monday Night Football, which starts at like 9 a.m. out there because it's all the way on the West Coast, they do these promotions, and they have the Bravo system there, and it's really cool, actually. They can select push a little button on the Bravo, and it selects a player that's you know, swipe their card
right
at a table, or they can select a table. And they do that all night. Sometimes they'll choose a player, and they just give you money. Sometimes they choose a table, and they call it a rack attack. And, of course, we're used to the rack attack here in Tampa Bay is that you actually have to rack the ships up as much as you are.
Right.
So I thought that's what it's going to be. So our table got chosen for the first rack attack, and I'm like, great. Well, it turns out they're a rack attack because they just come over with a rack of dollar chips, so $100, and just plop it right in the pot.
Awesome.
And then the person that wins the next hand wins the hand plus that extra $100, right?
Yep.
So when they did that, put it in our pot, we were playing 4-8 limit hold'em at the time. But it's with a full kill, and we were on the full kill at this time. So it was an 8-16 with $100 seated in it, right?
Oh, my God.
I'm dealt 4-6, Chris. What do I do?
Of course you're playing it. You're probably raising
two. You gotta play, right? There's $100 in there. And
of course.
Like,
$100 dead money. You automatically have the pot odds to play every two cards no matter what happens now.
It was raised twice pre-flop. I believe it was capped on the turn. And guess who rivers the straight?
Oh, my God. What did you step in out there? Is that horse country? Good God.
Oh, man. That was one of the guys, when they started pushing the pot, he was like, man, that's like a $500, $600 pot. It took me, I'm not lying, six hands to rack my chips up. Or stack my chips.
Oh, God.
And they actually had the chip runner to come over and have to, like, you know, give me red for some of them because I didn't have enough room. But talk about living large.
Jeez. I'm ever a present for any promotion going my way ever. And then, of course, it happens to you and you win the pot. That's just sick. Oh, my God. All right, well, what about tournaments? Did you do any better there?
Yeah, maybe. Well, you know, I got to the first day, and that was the 450 that I mentioned, the 100K guarantee, way above my normal bankroll. But, you know, I'm like, hey, when in Rome, right?
Jeez.
So, you know, I peeled off four Benjamins and a Grant and got into it, and really tough players. They had some really good players come out for this thing. And I was holding my own for a while, and then I just got schooled. I had a hand that was Jack 10 and called a raise, flopped Jack high. And rather than be aggressive with it, I just called it down to the river, and the guy pipped the king on the river and took a massive pot and took about 3/4 of my stack. Terribly played by myself. And then so then I got it all in with pocket tens like two hands later, and guy woke up with pocket queens, and boom, in the hotel room 2 hours after I spent $450.
Oh, man.
Actually, maybe a little longer than 4 hours. I made it past the rebuy period. So I'm like, so now I'm in a $450 hole, right?
Yeah.
And this rack attack I talked about didn't happen to the very last night. So the next day they have the $125 bounty, or 2 days later, actually, the $125 bounty tournament. Got into that, and that's a fun event. You know, we did this bounty on the last cruise, and I think we're going to do them pretty regularly on the cruises going forward. I think it actually adds a little something to it. I don't know what you think.
Well, it's definitely a different mentality. I mean, and I love it, too. I love it when they're knocking on players, and, well, yeah, I forgot, and they give you the bounty, you know, so.
Yeah.
Definitely pretty cool. I enjoy them when I play. I used to play them a lot in Sarasota.
Yeah, just running around with little quarter chips and popping them to you when you knock somebody out. So, I mean, obviously, it takes a little bit out of the prize pool, but what I kind of like, I guess, is it kind of recirculates the money. Even if you, I mean, only the top 10% cash in a tournament, right?
Right.
And you have a bounty tournament, at least a couple of other people are going to win a couple extra money, or a little bit of extra money, and... But I think it's a little more exciting because you're trying to knock somebody out, right? So early on, I had a really nice hand. Got a guy to go all in with a lesser king than I did. And so he counted down the chips, and he had two chips left, Chris.
Oh.
Isn't that the worst in a bounty?
Yeah, you do the heavy lifting, and someone else will knock him out now.
Except no one knocked him out.
Oh, no.
He went on a terrible run, a terrifying run, I think. And end up being the chip leader at a table when it broke.
Oh, no.
Chip in a chair, man, I tell you. But so I didn't get any bounties. Eventually, I went card dead for like three straight levels. And I'm curious what you think. You know, I know I'm a little too tight, and I'm working on that, not getting to the short stack ninja part. But when do you get to the any two card part? And the reason that I'm asking this is that when I say card dead, I'm not talking about like 4 or 5 or things like that where you can actually make a bluff and actually hit something. I'm talking about king tray and queen four, those type of hands that are just brutal. Hmm. You have no straight possibilities, really. They're not suited, so you have no flush possibilities. You're totally going to get dominated a lot of times. I just don't think those are cards I can play unless I get super, super short stacked.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. You have to be, it has to be like you're under the, you know, eight big blind. Your end might even be like three or something, and you're just like, oh, any face card, I'm going in with it. But if I have some room to maneuver or a few hands that I can wait it out, yeah, I'm not going to shove with that. I always regretted that on the World Series when we played out there that time in 07, that I went broke with King 5 because I had to get it all in with I was first to enter the pot and had to get all in with that King 5, and I was called by like some raggy hand. It wasn't even an ace high, and because I had so few chips that no it'd be silly to fold to me.
Right.
You know, so I put myself in that bad position and I had to do it with King 5. So I always regretted that that's how I got eliminated. You know, ultimately I was crushed by my jacks versus a set of fives. You know, a guy got all in with fives and I had jacks and he flopped a five on me. And that's what crippled me. I know what you're saying. I hate having to get all in with like two blinds and King 5. So I don't know what the point is, but it's definitely when you have less than, you know, usually it comes when you're crippled by a hand and you don't even have the option of saying, okay, now I'm 10 big blinds. Now I got, you know, you don't even have that option to make that choice because you got crippled. So
that was the thing, is I had the option. I mean, I wasn't flush with chips, but I wasn't desperate either. And I just didn't feel like I wanted to make a stand with those kind of hands. You just keep thinking, hey, I get King 3 now. Next hand's going to be something. It's going to be 7-8 suited or something that I can make a move with, right?
Yeah.
And the next hand's Queen 4. And the next hand's King 3 again. And then it's Jack 5. You're like, come on! One time!
That's why I always look at one card first. And if it's a king, I don't even look at the other one. I'm like, all right, I got a king. It's good.
That's a good way of getting around it.
Yeah, then you don't have to worry about it. Then also, too, your face isn't giving away anything like, I got King 3. Because you don't know you have King 3. So.
Yeah, that's right.
That's how I get around it.
But I got down to less than 50 players left in that tournament and got it all in queen. Can't ask for better, right? Mm. And guy in the big blind said, I'm not even going to look. I'm going to call you. And he turned over 9-7 suited. He flops two of his suits on the flop, and I'm like, this is not going to be good. Plus, he flopped a pair, so it was two diamonds and a nine on the flop. He couldn't ask for a better flop, right? And, of course, he rivers a seven. And so the diamonds, I was waiting for the diamonds, and the seven comes and knocks me out. So.
Jesus.
I'm like, yikes. And now I'm down to 575, right?
Yep.
I made a little bit back in cash, but I'm still in the hole, right? So then, of course, then I had that great rack attack. So I'm like, woohoo! I'm even Steven for the trip. But I got one last tournament to play, and it's the horse. It's the one I was looking forward to. So that's another $120 I peel off, right? Any bad luck I've had the entire week, Chris, disappeared in this tournament. I am never going to be this lucky again in my entire life. In fact, I felt so lucky in this tournament that I was scared to get on the airplane that morning. There's no way this airplane is not going to crash land. I've used my entire lifetime of luck in this one tournament.
So you can never say one time ever again.
No. My one time was spent in Sacramento, California last week.
Jeez.
From going on forward, it's going to be like second time? That's the best I'm going to say. But,
oh, my God.
But no, here's the thing. You know, because when I texted you about this tournament, you were talking about, you know, how it's a testament to our home game and we play these games pretty regularly, and we are. And I really went into this tournament really wanting to do well. I mean, I had the entire week of playing cash, you know, limit Hold'em, limit Omaha. We never got the stud game going there, but you know, I found myself in those cash games really paying attention to the mistake I was making. You know, I make that $12 call on the river, and I'm like, I really shouldn't have done that. The guy had to have the hand that he did, and he turned it over. And I'm like, I can't make that in the tournament, right?
Right.
And then also, just kind of analyzing the structures in these tournaments, and I know you've played horse tournaments before, too, and I think we've talked about this. I think it's really hard to put together a horse tournament structure that's supposed to end in one day, or even 2 days, I guess, if you just come back to the final table, that doesn't have... it doesn't get to a bingo point at some point before it should. I think it's just really hard to do that without making it just last 6 days. It's a limit tournament, right?
Right.
And you want to give people enough chips that they can play. So, you know, obviously I've learned from that, from the ones I've played, and I went in saying, you know what? So you have to adjust your strategy. You can't splash around in those, I don't think. You can't three-barrel fire ace-king in the limit hold'em without hitting something. You know, you definitely can't draw in stud, and you know, in Raz, you know, when you brick up, you got to get out of that. You can't just hope that you're going to get another good card in the next one, and you just got to conserve your chips, right? So that was the strategy I went in, and so I think there was an element of skill in this roller coaster ride, but I'm not going to dismiss the fact that I was incredibly lucky. I was all in 12 times before I quit counting. It was probably 20. You know, eventually I just like I couldn't count anymore. So at least 12 times all in. Once I was as low as 1,100 in chips, and then I just hit the most amazing run of my cards in my life at the final table, including one hand where the guy I was rolled up with fives and took a nice pot off of someone. Very next hand, an opponent said, like, "Hey, it's my turn to be rolled up." And we were all in whatever you call it.
Whatever you call it in a stud game.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh, no. And I had split jacks. And I'm like, okay, well, good hand. Wrap the table, right? And so it came down to the last card. And I squeezed. And I'm like, oof, you're not going to like this. And I got my third jack and flipped it up and knocked him out. So it was just stuff like that. I mean, it was just the most amazing run I've ever had, and so I had a massive chip lead three-handed, and second, third place said, you know what, we're not going to stay here all night and play against you. We're just going to chop second, third money. We'll let you win and keep the entire first place money and the title. And I'm like, hey, that's great. I got a flight to catch in 2 hours. And they're like, oh, no, you had a flight to catch. We should have stayed here. You probably would have got blinded out. I'm like, yeah, I probably would have. Too bad.
Wow, man, you really backed into this title. Holy cow.
Oh, but you have no idea, Chris. You have no idea. So here's the real story of this tournament. I think we had 52 runners that started this event, right?
Uh-huh.
We were about halfway through the field, probably 27-handed or so. And I had something like ace-ace, king-ten, something like that, right? No low hand. Popped a pre-flop, and at that point just short-stacked, had to get it in, got it all in at some point. In the hand, and the board just didn't agree with my hand, right?
Right.
Turned over the end, I'm just hoping my aces might be good. My lone opponent flipped over his hand and says straight, and I'm like, I know I can't beat a straight, and I don't have a low hand. So we wrapped the table. Hey, thanks, guys. Appreciate you playing. See you later at the cash game. Got up. Took 4 steps away from the table, Chris. All of a sudden, I hear, hey, where's your six? And a couple of people are like, yeah, I don't know if he has a straight. So I turn around and go back to the table. Turns out this guy misread his hand.
Oh, man.
Misdeclared his hand. And me being the big buffoon, didn't actually look at the board and make sure that what he said he had, he really did. And I was ready to walk away from this tournament.
Oh, man.
And what I think is even funnier about this is we have this thing going on in the forum right now about there's some folks that in their home game or pub games play declare rather than card speak.
Right.
And I really don't understand it, why you do it that way. And here's a great example. Here's this guy that, hey, I'm going straight. Okay, fine. Scott's going to bed. And fortunately, it's card speak, so the cards are on the table, and they were able to fix it. So I go back, right, to the table. And they're like, okay, no, he doesn't have a straight, but he does have two pair. And I'm like, oh. I'm like, but wait a minute. I have pocket aces. There's a pair of sevens on the board. And they're like, yes, you have a higher two pair. I'm like,
oh,
yes.
Oh, my God.
So then they push the whole pot to me, and they're like, wait a minute, wait a minute. I think he had a low, though. Oh, my gosh, he does have a low. So then they had to take half the pot back from him. They give that guy, and I'm like, whew. I sit down, and I'm like, you know what? That kind of thing doesn't happen without something better happening later on the tournament.
Yeah, because it's like destiny, right? You're meant to have
exactly.
survived.
Like, how can I not win this tournament now? When I was like tucked in my bed and came back from the dead.
Oh my God, that's unbelievable.
But
what
yeah,
a story.
Absolutely amazing. So the lesson is don't get up from the table until you've actually read the hand completely through.
Well, congratulations, buddy. And, you know, it was fitting that you put 2 9 of clubs in your hand for the winning shot. Of course, the one that we got all the guff over was 9 of spades, so you're...
Well, I didn't want to be...
you didn't want to be a complete copycat, I guess.
Exactly, yeah. So
but,
I went out and pissed on it.
So what, there were no winning cards because you chopped, so...
Yeah, that was the thing. So, yeah. You know, we got done, and I'm like, hey, I need my picture with my chips, and They're like, okay, and they're like, I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't have a winning hand. This sucks.
Yeah, this is what happens all the time. That's why you always see guys with pocket aces in their hand when they're posing for the photo, because they chopped.
So then Ben, the tournament or the poker manager, is like, "Hey, you can just pick whatever hand you want." And then I'm like, "Oh, that's weird. Maybe I'll go to Omaha." And then he's like, "You know what? You should do two nines of spades." And for folks that don't really know what the joke is, we poker manager gave John Dolan two nines of spades when he won a big event at the Beau Rivage. Put it on recover. We thought nothing of it. We should have thought something of it, apparently. Everybody in the world thinks we're big idiots for not realizing it was a mistake. I'm like, that wasn't a mistake. It was a joke. So now I decided, you know, and he's like, yeah, you should do that too. I'm like, you know what? You're right. I'm going to own that joke now. If I ever win another tournament again, I'm not going to care what my winning cards are. I'm going to like, hey, give me those two nine of clubs.
That's right.
That's my hand now.
That's right. Doyle Bruns has a 10-2. Scott has two nines of clubs.
But hey, an absolute great time. I really had a blast out there, win or lose, and hope folks come out for the main event this weekend. And they had a phenomenal turnout for the two tournaments after I left too, so get out there and play. And then remember, you can get all the details on the NEF Poker Tour, including our next event January 25th at Red Rock Casino Resort in Las Vegas, and our NEF Poker Tour World Championship at the all-inclusive Hard Rock Punta Cana in Dominican Republic. We're now taking bookings for that. All that information you can find at antiuppokertour.com.
Hey, this is AJ Benzing.
This is Justin Bonomo.
This is Downtown Chad Brown.
Hi, this is Clooney Gallen.
This is Daniel Negreanu.
Hey, this is David Singer.
This is Linda Johnson.
Hi, this is Greg Raymer.
Hi, this is Hoyt Corkins.
Hi, this is Cindy Violet.
Hi, this is John D'Agostino.
This is Joe Seabach.
This is Jennifer Harmon.
Yeah, this is Johnny Chan.
This is Cowboy Kenna James.
Hi, this is Mark Safe.
This is Paul Wasserkin.
Hi, this is Miami Johnson.
This is Doyle Brunson, and you're listening to Annie Up.
All right, so we got a 1-3 no-limit cash game hand for you, Chris.
Maybe I should have the hand now that you have a title and I'm just your lackey.
Yeah, I was going to say, well, I mean, if it's a horse game, then absolutely. But this is no limit. I still have not proven myself as a no limit player.
All right. I'll step up to the plate and try not to make too much of a fool of myself.
And I will guarantee you this week that our reader is not trying to get cute with us.
All right. So Jay is Jay, right?
Jay from KC.
Yeah. It's actually his hand that we're talking about here, not...
It's actually his hand, right. And you know, I can't promise that he got everything else right, but there's no switcheroo this week, right?
Okay.
All right. Jay from KC writes in a hand of the 1-3 no-limit table at the Hollywood Casino, gorgeous place out there. And he said he was on his third $100 buy-in and had worked his stack back up to $500, and he says, sorry, Chris, it happens sometimes.
Okay.
All right, so with $500 and an apology to Chris, he was in the big blind, in the under the gun, plus two, with squiggly, 200, and he says it's more fun to spell it out than use the squiggly mark. Totally agree. Under the gun, plus two, with squiggly, 200, opens for $13, and he says this is a standard, if not small, pre-flop raise. He folds around to the small blind with squiggly, 400, who calls... And we're in the big blind with the deuce of spades, deuce of diamonds. Go.
Yeah, that's a nice little call in hand. Maybe we'll catch somebody with like ace king, and they'll hit one of their cards, and we'll flop a set, and we'll get all their money. So let's call.
Excellent. Good. We're all in agreement. So yeah. That's what he does. He makes the call, and he says, "I'm obviously just set mining here."
Yep.
Flop comes. Ace of spades, tray of diamonds, deuce of clubs.
Yes.
Set mind. And small blind checks to us.
Okay, well, the initial raiser acts last here, right? We're in the blinds. So, yes. A lot of people say that sometimes when you flop a set, you know, check raising is amateurish. And since I'm an amateur, I'm going to check. there is a line of thinking here that if this guy has ace-king, and you can believe very hard that he has ace-king or ace-queen, you know, that you're going to want to bet into him because he can't fold his hand. But if he doesn't have something like that, if he has, like, you know, something that's marginal, then maybe you want to get your chance in later. So... Who knows? But generally, a check here is going to get this preflop guy who took control. And you're only in the blind, so he's never going to put you on a set anyway. So I like the check here.
All right, so you're going to check with the intention to check raising? Or
yes.
Checking?
Okay. No, I like to raise here because I'm hoping that he has like ace-king. Then he comes back over the top and we get it all in with my set. I mean, there's no way he's got 4-5 here, so.
You know what? I'm going to be a little dangerous here, I think. I'm going to check with the intention of not check raising.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to assume that someone's going to fire a bet here with the ace there. And the reason why is I think the ace kind of... The ace is an interesting card on this flop, I think. Obviously, it's a dangerous flop. I can't put the small blind on 4-5 or any kind of combination where the straight's going to come. So I think we're pretty safe not getting run down with a straight. And there's three different suits there, so I'm not worried about the flush right now. So I'm not afraid to take a free card here, and I'm not afraid to not try to get more money in here. I'm going to kind of disguise the hand a little bit and maybe bet out on the turn. Or depending on what it comes, if I really think this guy is aggressive, then let him put another bet in and do my check raise on the turn.
Okay.
I wouldn't normally do that. I would normally bet my set. But because of the ace here, I think it's, you know... Here's the thing. If the guy has kings, 10, something like that, betting out here, I think it's going to kill him.
Yeah.
And I know, obviously, you're not suggesting that. You're suggesting a check raise. And then the check raise, I almost think, is going to be the same thing. I could be wrong, but...
Yeah, the other thing, too, is...
I'm willing to gamble a little bit just because of the board.
The check call, then bet the turn, is the same thing to me as check raise, and you're going to get the same exact. You're not going to make any more
could
money.
Could be. That's what I'm saying. I'm hoping for a card that lets me feel confident that he's going to bet the turn again.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is always kind of tough, because, I mean, I don't want to lose two streets of value here.
Right.
And that's a tough thing, I think. So, but we'll see what happens here. All right. Our hero says, I decide to take a check with the intention of check raising. Can't argue with that. Just have a different way of going about it, but I think that's a great way to play this. He says, my thought is if we get a C bet, then it's more likely that the small blind will call with a marginal hand. Sure enough, the initial raiser bets $30 and the small blind calls. Mission accomplished.
Yeah, now I'm definitely raising, though.
Yeah, that I think that changes it for me now. I mean, we got two people in. I'm going to try to, you know, get my value in now, and again, I'm not really worried about anything at this point. Are you worried about anything? I mean...
No, I mean, what could you possibly worry about? Set of aces?
I'm just worried about somebody has another pair, and they got two cards of his or set, and that's not anything for me to ever to worry about, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible that pocket threes... You know, the other blind has pocket threes. It's possible. It's possible that the guy you raised had aces, and now he swapped a set. But really, set over
set...
For
those hands, we're going to lose our stack anyhow,
yeah,
right?
So exactly. So I'm not really worried about much right now.
Yeah, I mean, this really is a beautiful flop for us. Got the ace, so hopefully one of our players has an ace, or both of them, that would be great. And we don't have to worry about the straights or flushes, really. And like I said, and you know, if we're already dead, we're dead anyhow.
Right.
Can't do anything about it. So, and if somebody catches up with another set, then we can't do anything about that either. So, all right, so we're going to raise. So what's the amount you're going to put out there? Let's see, it's 60.
120.
Here's the 90. It's about $100 in the pot.
Yeah, I'm going to put about $100 out there, I guess. Because generally, I'm going to raise 3x to the better. Okay. That's 90, but we got another guy calling.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, looking at maybe 100 to 120 now, really. I really want to make sure these guys aren't just drawing on me, you know. Because there are a couple of hands here that, you know, could catch up to us. Ace Trey could catch up on the turn. Ace 5, Ace 4 could make a wheel. So I do want to make sure that these guys are paying now. And since I got another guy coming along, that's more cards I have to beat or dodge with my set. So, you know what? I got $60. It's like the guy bet 60. You know what I mean? If you bet 60 into me, I may just call for a heads up. But with two people calling 30, you know, another guy calling at 30, I want to make sure that I'm heads up with this guy at least. So I'm going to raise a pretty significant amount.
Okay. Our hero decides to raise to just $65, and he actually says just. Since there are not many scare cards for me, and I'd like to keep them both in. All right, you want to get one of them out, and he wants to keep them both in.
Who's I'm always up for trying to be heads up with somebody. I mean, I don't mind having two opponents pre-flop, but after that, he's seeing three cards now. There's a reason why that guy's calling 30. What is that reason? So...
Yeah, I mean, I guess my thinking is here, if we're trying to keep them both in, why raise here?
Yeah,
exactly. Because raising, I think, is really going to put the pressure on at least one, if not both of them, to get out.
Yeah.
You know, if you really want to keep them both in, just call.
And it's a scary raise, too. You're making it almost a min raise. So you're sending all kinds of signals to these guys. Hey, dude, I'm really strong. Get out. If you want,
I mean, even the fact that you're check raising is sending a pretty strong.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. All the signals.
I think that's the problem with check raising in general, is that no one really check raised bluffs, I don't think. You know, when you check raise from the blinds, it's, hey, all right, gotcha.
Yeah.
You made your C bet. Guess what? I gotcha. And it pretty much, you know, kills the action the rest of the hand, I think. So, you know, if your intention is to keep them both in, I don't think this is the way to go about it. Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't keep them both in. I think I tend to agree with you that I would rather get heads up here. So that's why I would check raise, to try to get us heads up and try to knock the weaker of the two players out.
Yeah. I definitely would. Check raise there, you're telling the guy you have two pair, you have a set, you have a mate straight. You're telling him that you have a hand that you were willing to just give him a free card and it wasn't going to bother you. That's what you're basically telling him.
Exactly. Yep. Yep. All right. So both players called, though. So, hey, what do we know?
Holy cow.
And the turn is the Jack of Hearts. So our board now is Ace of Spades, Tray of Diamonds, Deuce of Clubs, Jack of Hearts.
Of course,
and
it's four suits.
Checked again.
Four suits, I mean, because it's a hand of the week and they don't want to be chastised for sticking around with a flush draw. So they always send in the four different suits. All right. So it checks to us?
Yep.
How much is in the pot?
Well, let's see. That would be 90. Yeah, 90 plus the preflop action of 40. So about
like
130. 130 minus rake.
So yeah, yeah. All right, so I'm going
to quarter.
I'm going to bet a. I'm going to bet about 90.
Okay.
85, 90, something like that. If that's how much is in the pot, because that sounds about right. 90 would be about three quarters of the pot, I guess. Because now I've got guys calling. Why are they calling? That jack couldn't have helped them. So why are they, you know, unless they have pocket jacks, which seems unlikely. So why would they be calling unless they had some sort of drawing? So that jack couldn't have helped them. So I'm going to bet pretty significantly a good amount.
So you think they're drawing. You don't think there's like a...
No. One of them is. One of them.
An ace queen. Okay.
One of them is drawing. One of them.
But what are they drawing to?
Well, I mean, it could be an ace four.
No one's
ace
got
five.
A four or a five, right?
Could be ace four, ace five. You know, could
have a draw. Ace four, ace five. Okay,
you know, all right. So a pair and a draw.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, all right. I can see that.
So I'm trying to punish the aces for, you know, and I'm trying to make the other guys make a mistake. So I don't know, 90 bucks maybe.
Okay. Our hero bets 80, which he says is about half the pot. I don't know if he missed a bet here somewhere there, but. Doesn't quite seem half the pot, but in line with your bet, right?
Yeah.
The initial raiser folds, but the small blind quickly calls.
Quickly calls. Oof. Quickly calls sounds like an ace, doesn't it?
No, I don't know. I mean, quickly calls usually is not the turd. And I would think with a check raise and then another bet here, I would think it would have to be stronger. I mean, maybe, I think the weakest they probably have is maybe ace-jack, which would make sense.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, maybe ace-jack, just because of the quickly part of it.
Right.
You know, a lot of times people call it quickly for a small bet when they're on a draw, but in this case, that's a pretty big bet to call quickly without having us pretty strong holding.
Or the hand that you're talking about, an ace-four or an ace-five. I think those are the only two quicklies, unless there's already, he got frisky with four or five and already has it made, or did have the pocket jacks and just got lucky. Quickly call. I'm pretty certain on this board, it's something decent. Maybe not something as decent as ours.
Yeah.
But he has a hand. He's not drawing, I don't think.
One thing I'm thinking is that I would never quickly call with a gut shot. You know, a pair and a gut shot. I don't think I would. I would at least give that some thought. So it seems like ace four and ace five wouldn't be likely with that. It's possible because he's got aces and he doesn't believe us or something. But you know, ace four or ace five is a quick call. It's tough. So maybe it is something like ace jack.
All right. Well, the river brings the four of diamonds. So our final board is ace of spades, tray of diamonds, deuce of clubs, jack of hearts, four of diamonds. So that lovely ace five got there, if that was out there. The small blind immediately bets 125 into the squiggly $325 pot.
Jeez. Oh, man. All right, so we got to call 125 to win about 450.
I think our opponents, I think this is a beautiful bet if he has us crushed.
Yeah.
Because he's giving us the right odds to make that call, right?
Yeah, with a set.
Because it's probably not mathematically correct for us to fold here, even though at this point I'd be astounded if we had this hand won.
Yeah, you know, here's the thing. It's hand of the week, so we know we lose, because we always lose.
We know we always lose.
So, I would
You're
fold.
You're perpetuating a myth.
Knowing that it's hand of the week, I would fold, but knowing that I'm at that table with a set of deuces, and the way a hand came down, I feel like I might be beat, but I have such a strong holding that the only hands that make sense are pocket jacks that beat us, or, and even that, if you go back, would he have re-raised pre-flop with those, because he was the small blind.
Well, what about pocket aces?
And then pocket aces.
We haven't really talked about that, because if you're the small blind, I could see someone just calling that raise and hoping for a good flop, and then getting it and feeling very confident. If you have pocket aces on this board, you're feeling fairly, really confident. Particularly
a lot of 1-3 players. Yeah, I mean, maybe something will do that. It's just, I know I don't like to be a lot. Just as me, but I don't like to be out of position in any hand if I don't have to be. So I always like to at least take control of the hand when I have aces out of position. So yeah, it is kind of, plus you have the blind behind you to act. So you really don't want guys to get cheap flops for $13, but it could be aces. I did mention aces before, but I was thinking of the other razor, not the small blind with that hand. That would be real interesting. If this guy turns over pocket aces, I will be shocked.
But here's the kind of thing for me, and I'm going to get my friend rant all in a bunch here about this. To me, we could sit here and talk about what he might have or might not. To me, it's the action that is signifying to me that we're beat. It's not so much now the point of me trying to figure out what he might have. It's just the action really makes me feel like we're beat here.
Yeah.
You know, he calls the preflop. He calls the check raise. He quickly calls the small blind, or I mean the turn, and now bets out to us on the river. It doesn't, you know, unless it's an elaborate predetermined bluff, just the action alone, regardless of the cards on the board, signifies to me that this is a really strong hand. And at this point, what we thought our hand was really strong doesn't look very strong anymore to me.
It does feel a lot like 4-5 if I replay the hand. I think he doesn't really have to worry about coming alive at all in this hand until the end, because no hand gets there. No flush got there on the turn. It was just a jack, and it was a heart. So he really could have kept playing it this slowly if he felt that these guys are going to keep being aggressive. And then at the end, he didn't want to miss a bet with having them check behind, so now he bets out. So it really does feel like it could have been 4-5 or, what is it, the four diamonds? So ace-5? It really feels like 4-5 and maybe ace-5. It really does, because I don't know if he would have called a raise with 4-5, so maybe it is ace-5, because he might call a raise with an ace in his hand. But that quick call on the turn, that kind of throws me for a loop here.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to look at the cards, which I guess you should, right, because they're there.
Yeah.
The only hand that makes sense by the line that this guy has taken that we have beat is ace-jack.
Yeah.
I guess maybe ace-4.
Ace tray.
Or an ace tray, or one of a, you know, a two pair kind of hand, but I mean, I guess there are a couple more combinations of two pairs. I didn't think about that. I was thinking the ace jack, but so yeah, so 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 5 hands that are reasonable that we have beat, and what? 1, 2, 3, 4
hands.
Five hands that have us crushed.
Yeah. So it's 50-50, it's a coin flip, and you're getting 4-1 on your money.
Yep, exactly. And that goes back to what I was talking about. I think it's a good bet. If he has his crushed, it's a good bet. If he doesn't have his crushed, it's a bad bet on his part.
Yeah. It's not necessarily 4-1, but you know what I'm saying.
But yeah. It's well in our favor to make this trying call.
Yeah,
right?
It's a good bet.
All right. Well, our hero says, this makes me wonder if he flopped a straight, but 125 to win 450 is good enough for me to call with a set, and we agree. Small blind turns over ace of diamonds, 5 of clubs for the rivered straight, and apologizes for his play on the hand.
Yeah, I mean, really, first of all, you're calling a raise in the worst position possible with ace 5 off.
Off, yep.
Then you're getting some heat, and you're calling with a also, then, after calling the heat, Then you call the reheat that we check raise
quickly
with.
Too. Yes,
and then no, I mean on the turn you quickly call an $80 bet with ace five, so you have aces with a horrible kicker and four outs to win this hand, given by the what we told you what we had. And then when the river comes, you bet right out, which makes total sense because he doesn't want to be, you know, lose that bet to a check behind with some weak ace or something.
Well, and it turns out to be, absolutely.
Jeez.
I mean, again, it ended up being a good bet on the end, and I don't think a player that plays this hand in that position is smart enough to make that kind of bet purposely on the end.
Yeah.
It just happened to be a good bet. You know, if he bets, you know, 200, 300, then it's a tougher decision for us, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Because you're, first of all, that's a big bet, you know, 200 or 300. And it's a big bet into that pot. And on top of it, you know, this, why is this guy waking up now with that kind of a bet? A 125 bet could be an ace jack value bet, easy. So that's, it's just, it's a really, you know, $100, $90, $125, somewhere around there. Those are all good returns on your money with a set. So the guy, it sounded like the guy just really wanted to make some more money on the hand and settled on that number and was fortunate to settle on the right number.
Yeah.
Jeez.
All right, Jay. Well, sorry you lost the hand. Not much you could have done about there, I don't think, though. But you are the winner of the download of the Chinese 13-card poker app for Apple products, so you got something going on for you there.
Sweet.
Our good friends from Smapsoft will send that to you. And folks that have not won, you don't have to be a winner and enjoy this great app. You can download it yourself by visiting the iTunes store. And remember to send your hands of the week, mailbag, and call the floor questions to podcast@antiupmagazine.com. If we use it on the show, we'll send you something wonderful.
All right. Well, nice job. I'm Scott Long's lackey.
And I'm Chris Cassenz's. I can't see it.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.